Let me ask you something, and be honest with yourself. You're a student pilot, or maybe you just passed your check ride last month. You're flying along on a beautiful day, and there's a nice puffy cumulus cloud off to your right. How close can you legally get to it? If you had to answer that right now, out loud in the cockpit, with no chart supplement and no phone to Google it, could you? Most pilots can't, and I don't say that to make anybody feel bad. I say it because this is one of the most misunderstood regulations in the entire book, and it's also one of the most important ones for keeping you alive. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to sit down together and finally untangle Federal Aviation Regulation 9155. That's the one that tells you how far you have to stay away from clouds and how much visibility you need when you're flying under visual flight rules or VFR. We'll be saying that a lot today. By the time we're done, you're going to have this memorized. Not because you crammed it for a test, but because you'll actually understand why it's built the way it's built. Before we dig in, let me give a quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial? They've got you covered. Learning to fly is a series of hard-won milestones, and there's something really nice about holding a physical reminder of the day you crossed one. aviationsoul.com. Go take a look. Okay, let's walk through this together. Here's the first thing you need to understand, and it's the thing that trips everybody up. The cloud clearance and visibility rules are not one single set of numbers. They change depending on three things: what class of airspace you're in, whether it's day or night, and how high you are above the ground and above sea level. That's why people get confused. They memorize one set of numbers, they think they've got it, and then they fly into a different chunk of airspace where the rules are completely different. So let's build this up piece by piece. Let's start with the airspace almost all of us do most of our flying in. Class E and Class G, that's the uncontrolled and the controlled airspace that isn't right on top of a tower or a big terminal. There's a magic number here, and the number is 10,000 feet mean sea level, mean SL, meaning your altitude above the ocean, what your altimeter reads. Below 10,000 and at or above 10,000, the rules are different. Hold that thought, we'll come back to it. For now, let's say you're a normal general aviation pilot below 10,000 feet in Class E airspace during the day. Here are your numbers, 3, 1, 5, 2,000. Let me say that again, because that little phrase is going to be your anchor for the rest of your flying career. 3, 1, 5, 2,000. 3 statute miles of flight visibility, 1,000 feet above the clouds, 500 feet below the clouds, and 2,000 feet horizontally away from the clouds. Picture a cloud floating out there. You need to be 1,000 feet over the top of it, or 500 feet under the bottom of it, or 2,000 feet off to the side of it. And no matter what, you need at least 3 statute miles of visibility to see where you're going. Here's a little memory trick I used when I was training, and I still use it today. Think of the cloud as a building you don't want to bump into. You give it a lot of room over the top, because that's where fast traffic descending out of the clouds might pop out. 1,000 feet over, underneath. You only need 500 because you can see what's coming. And 2,000 feet to the side. 3, 1, 5, 2,000. Say it in the shower. Say it while you pre-flight, get it into your bones. Now, why does this rule even exist? This is the part your instructor might not have explained, and it's the part that makes the whole thing click. The clouds are where the instrument traffic lives. Airplanes flying on instrument flight rules, IFR, can be inside those clouds. In the soup, flying purely on their gauges. They can't see you. You can't see them until they come bursting out of the edge of that cloud. So the cloud clearance rule is really a time rule in disguise. It's about giving two airplanes, one who can see and one who can't, enough time and space to not hit each other when somebody comes out of the white. Think about it. An airliner descending at 250 knots punches out the bottom of a cloud layer. If you're tucked up right against that cloud, you have a fraction of a second. If you're 500 feet below it and 2,000 feet to the side, now you've got room. Now you've got time. That's the whole point. It's not bureaucratic box checking. It's collision avoidance written into law. Okay, let's add the next layer. Night. At night, in that same Class E airspace below 10,000 feet, the visibility jumps from 3 miles to 3 miles. Wait, that stays the same. But there's a subtlety here people miss. In Class G airspace, uncontrolled airspace, the numbers get more restrictive at night, and we'll get to Class G in a minute because it's the weird one. Let me stay disciplined and finish the 10,000-foot story first. because this is where a lot of cross-country pilots get burned, at or above 10,000 feet MSL. In Class E, the rules change dramatically. Now it's not 3, 1, 5, 2,000. Now it's 5, 1,000, 1,000, 1 mile. 5 statute miles of visibility, 1,000 feet above the clouds, 1,000 feet below the clouds, and 1 statute mile horizontal. Why bigger up high? Speed again. Above 10,000 feet, airplanes are allowed to fly faster than 250 knots. Below 10,000, there's a speed limit. That's regulation 91.117, a topic for another day, but it matters here. Down low, everybody's held to 250 or slower. Up high, the gloves come off, airplanes are moving faster, so you need to see farther and stay farther from the clouds to have the same amount of reaction time. Do you see the logic threading through all of this? Every one of these numbers is really an answer to the question, how much time do I need to see and avoid another airplane? Faster airplanes, more space, it's beautifully consistent once you see it. Now let's talk about the airspace that confuses the most people. Class G, uncontrolled airspace. The stuff usually down near the surface out in the countryside, under the shelf of the bigger airspace. Class G is the loosest set of rules in the whole system, and it changes with altitude and time of day more than any other. During the day, at or below 1,200 feet above the ground. In Class G, you need 1 statute mile of visibility, and you need to remain clear of clouds. That's it. 1 mile and clear of clouds. No specific 1,500, 2,000. Just don't fly into one and keep a mile of visibility. That sounds generous, and it is, but here's where I want to slow down and be the honest instructor, because this is exactly the kind of rule that reads like permission and functions like a trap. Legal and safe are not the same thing. 1 mile of visibility, clear of clouds, is legal in Class G during the day. It is also a fantastic way to fly a perfectly good airplane into terrain, or into a tower, or into another airplane who's also scud running at 1 mile. Just because the regulation lets you does not mean you should. I've known good pilots who died legal. Keep that in your head every time you read a minimum. A minimum is the edge of the cliff, not the trail you're supposed to walk on at night in Class G, at or below 1,200 feet. The rules tighten up. Now you're back to 3 miles visibility and that 3, 1, 5, 2,000 cloud clearance, with one exception we'll mention in a second. The FAA looked at flying at night, close to the ground, in the dark, and said, no, we're not giving you the loose daytime rules. You need more room. There is one narrow exception at night in Class G that shows up on a lot of knowledge tests. If you're in the traffic pattern within half a mile of the runway, you can operate with 1 statute mile visibility and clear of clouds. Even at night, as long as you stay in that pattern, that's so you can shoot night landings at a small, untowered field. It's a real thing. It's in the regulation, and the examiner may ask you about it, but it's a narrow little carve-out. Don't let it become your everyday habit. Let me pause here, because I can feel this turning into an alphabet soup of numbers, and that's the exact thing I promised we wouldn't do. So, let's zoom back out, and I'll give you the framework I actually want you to carry in the cockpit. There are really only a handful of scenarios you fly in as a VFR pilot. Memorize the scenarios, not the whole table. Scenario 1. You're bumming around below 10,000 feet in controlled airspace, Class E, day or night. 315, 2,003 miles, 1,000 above, 500 below, 2,000 to the side. This is your bread and butter. Know it cold. Scenario 2. You're up on a high cross country at or above 10,000 feet, MSL. 5 and 1,000, 1,000 and a mile. Bigger numbers because everybody's faster up there. Scenario 3. You're low, in the boonies, Class G in the daytime. 1 mile, clear of clouds. But you're going to treat that like the danger zone it is and give yourself way more room than the law requires. Scenario 4. You're low in Class G at night, back to 315, 2000, with that tiny traffic pattern exception, 4 scenarios. That's it. That's the whole regulation organized the way your brain actually flies. Now, how does this show up on your check ride? Because that's what a lot of you are here for. The Airman Certification Standards, the ACS, the document that defines what you're tested on, puts this squarely in the airspace area of operations. The examiner is looking for you to state the basic VFR weather minimums for the airspace you're operating in. Not recite the entire table like a robot. They want to point at the airspace you're actually planning to fly through on your cross country and hear you say, correctly and confidently, what the minimums are there and why they matter. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The examiner isn't trying to trap you with the most obscure night class G corner case. They want to know that you can look at your route, identify the airspace, and know whether the weather that morning actually lets you make the flight. That's the real skill. Reading a weather briefing that says 3 miles visibility and broken clouds at 1,000 feet and knowing instantly whether you can legally and safely go. Let me give you a real scenario to tie it all together. You planned a cross-country morning of the flight, you pull your weather briefing. Ceiling is reported at 1,500 feet broken, visibility 6 miles. Your route takes you through Class E airspace the whole way, below 10,000 feet. Walk through it with me. You need 3 miles visibility, you've got 6. Good, you need to stay 1,000 feet below those clouds. The clouds are at 1,500 feet. 1,000 below that puts your ceiling for legal flight at 500 feet above the ground. Now ask the real question. Do you want to be scraping along at 500 feet over unfamiliar terrain to stay legal below the clouds? Absolutely not. Legal, maybe. Smart, no. That's the decision the ACS is really testing. And it's the decision that keeps you breathing. The regulation gave you a floor. Your judgment has to build the house on top of it. One more practical piece before we wrap. Notice I've been careful to say flight visibility and statute miles. Flight visibility is what you can actually see from the cockpit, and it's what the regulation legally requires. The visibility reported at the airport in the ATIS or the weather observation, that's ground visibility, and it's your best proxy, but the reg is written around what you see up there. And it's statute miles, not nautical miles. Weather visibility in the United States is always statute. Your airplane speed is in knots, nautical. Two different measuring sticks in the same cockpit. Don't mix them up. So there it is. 9155, the whole thing. Laid out the way it should have been explained to all of us the first time. 3, 1, 5, 2,000 for your everyday flying. Bigger numbers up high because of speed. Looser numbers down low in Class G, which you'll treat with respect instead of relief. And through all of it, remember the reason the rule exists at all. It's about time. Time to see the airplane you didn't know was there, coming out of the white. My thanks to the Federal Aviation Administration for the regulations themselves in Part 91, and to the Airman Certification Standards for framing what a good pilot is actually supposed to know. If you want the reference material, it's all linked over at radiohangar.com. Go pull up 9155 tonight and read it with what we talked about in your head. I promise it reads completely differently. Now fly safe, and I'll see you back in the pattern.